You're listening to the weekly Portland podcast. For a complete list of episodes, visit pdxpod.com or find us on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Remember to like, share, and subscribe.
Hunter Shobe and David Bennis are the authors of Portlandness, a cultural atlas. Hunter Shobe is a cultural geographer and assistant professor at PSU with over 15 years of experience researching the cultural, political, and economic dimensions of how people connect to places and environments. David Bennis manages the Center for Spatial Analysis and Research in the Geography Department at PSU. I'm Gregory Day. Welcome to the show. We're going to be listening to some of Hunter's presentation at PDX Talks soon, but we begin with Dr. Shobe explaining how the book came to be. D. Ellen Anderson is the special guest interviewer today, along with myself.
We thought about that this would be a good idea, and we had some meetings with some people who we thought would be interested, and then we eventually had a few classes that we taught, and one of the projects was to suggest, a possible page pair for a book like this. And so it took several years of those things happening for us to get enough material for us to say, okay, yeah, maybe this could be a book.
And I wouldn't say until, say, 2012 did we have what we felt like was enough material to even consider having a book. And then the question was, how do you make a book?
Yeah, we had to learn how to propose a book. And we went to a colleague who is a publisher here at Ooligan Press, and she was very helpful to suggest, well, you have to tell them why your book is different and what you're doing and who you are and what the market for your book is and all those things. So we learned, it was really, it was great to learn about that stuff as well.
Was the title always Portlandness?
Well, we came up with the idea of Portlandness.
Great title,
in 2008, by the way. Just, it was an exercise we did in a class.
That's
a
right.
Sense of place class, where we asked students to give us characteristics that define Portland, and I will see if I could map those. And they gave us all sorts of things like Portland is liberal, and it's environmental, and people do public commuting, and all sorts of characteristics like that. And we put together this idea, put together a single map that defined what we called Portlandness. Now, not all of Portland has the same level of Portlandness. And it was just a fun little exercise, but we really liked the name.
And that becomes the hook to talk about the limits of that kind of mapping, finding surrogate measures for things. And you find out that the center of the city, downtown and inner southeast, are considered really Portland. And, of course, that's very limiting. So what we wanted to do was shatter and blow up that idea through all these other explorations that we did. And the title changed a little bit we had a different title going in that we weren't super happy about, and the publisher at the last minute said, hey, wait a minute, what about changing it to Portlandness? And when we said, yeah, let's go for it.
One week before the final proofs were sent.
Yeah, so it was truly last minute.
Do you want to tell us what the original title was?
We'll just leave that as a mystery, I think, for the listener.
So my favorite map is the ghosts, the paranormal mapping.
Cool.
What is your favorite map?
That's a tough question.
You gotta answer
it's
it.
It's like asking which is your favorite kid, right? Yeah.
Right. I would say mine, just because of the nature and the complexity of the story, is the map that has all sorts of Portland plans all put on one map. And they're all the things we never did.
Right.
And what I like about it is it kind of tells the story that maybe whatever we think we're doing right now that we think is just fantastic,
right,
we're not actually going to do. And 50 years from now, we'll think, what were those people, you know, in 2017 thinking? They were just nuts to propose these ideas. And I think that map conveys that.
I'm so happy with that explanation. That's a hard act to follow, sir.
I would say that my favorite map, and I can probably do it with this, yeah, is the map that was made by, illustrated by third graders in East Portland.
Right, right.
So I had a student who was an art teacher, and she had 55 students illustrate Portland. Then she took one element from each of their maps and created a large map that was a composite view of all their view of Portland. And, you know, whenever we get adults to try to do something like that, they really get angry at us, and they really get anxious, and they don't want to misrepresent their place, but the kids don't really get hung up on that. And so this mental map that shows the view of third graders, one of the cool things about the map is that this is a school out in East Portland. So 82nd is this wonderful place with all kinds of things going on and vibrant, colorful, and it's not how everybody sees 82nd necessarily, but it's how they do because they live there and they go to school there.
So now we're going to be listening to an excerpt of Dr. Sherb's presentation at PDX Talks.
What you're looking at here on the screen is the very first map of our new book, Portlandness, a Cultural Atlas. And what it does is it reimagines Portland as a blueprint of a house. And we all know that Portland has a living room, right? It's Pioneer Courthouse Square. But we figured, what kind of house only has one room? So we wanted to figure out what the other neighborhoods would be. And so we sort of put this together. And if you look closely, I don't know if you can see from there, you can see that Portland's dining room is the Pearl. And Portland's library is Portland State University. And Portland's balcony are the Skidmore Bluffs. And Portland's in-law suite is Vancouver. But so this is kind of a lighthearted look at Portland, but it does something really important for us at the beginning of our book. And it forces us to reimagine a place that we think we know really well. And it forces us to use our geographic imagination to understand a place. And indeed, this is the map that, in sort of altered hue, made it to the cover of our book. And the book is called Portlandness. But what is Portlandness? What makes Portland, Portland? Think about that for a moment. What is it that makes Portland different from every other place? What is it that makes Portland distinct and unique? Or as geographers might say, what is it that gives Portland its senses of place for Portland and its surrounding areas? Are there parts of Portland that are more Portland than others? Does that even make sense? What about the metropolitan area? How Portland is Hillsborough as compared to Beaverton or Gresham? There are insider and outsider views of Portland, but there's not one insider or outsider view. People have different experiences and places, and so they have different senses of place. So it becomes really difficult to represent something like Portlandness. It's a book about maps, so how can we represent Portlandness graphically with maps? And that's a really big challenge. We've been working on some form of Portlandness since 2007 or 2008. And so we asked our students to tell us what they thought Portland was like, what it was known for, and we decided we would find surrogate measures to map that relate to those different measures. So one of the things our students claimed was that Portland is a liberal place. So we thought, well, how could we possibly represent this? So we found a voting measure. This was, I think, a measure 80 in 2012, the failed attempt to legalize marijuana in Oregon. And the more purple there is, the more support there was for legalization. And the more red, the less support there was for legalization. Now, is this a perfect surrogate for liberalness? It's clearly not. However, it's a way of talking about things that is and displaying things on a map that are normally extremely difficult to map. We also asked our students what else they thought, and they said, well, Portland is an environmental city. So we mapped another voting initiative, and this was from several years ago, a 2010 initiative, which would have extended lottery funding to cover parks, beaches, wildlife, and watershed protection. And so this is a different pattern. The deeper blue or purple here represents a more positive vote for that initiative, and then the very little red here represents less support. So at least by these two measures, environmental Portland and liberal Portland are not necessarily exactly the same.
our students made a wild claim and suggested that Portland was known for breweries, so we decided to make a density map of breweries, and we are, if you look at it, pretty close to the brewery belt right now, where we are. We did some more research and we found out that Portland has the most breweries of any city on the planet Earth. And there was much rejoicing in the class as well. We also asked our students, well, what else is Portland known for? And back in 2008, nobody said food carts, because although we had food carts, it wasn't known as well as it is today. And so we decided to make this map of the density of food carts. And as you can see, it's a bit different from the other ones. It's a lot more centrally located, the density measure here. It's not as diffuse. And so yet again, it's a different measure. Our students claim that people in Portland don't like to use cars very much. So we decided to research carless commuting and put together this map as sort of a surrogate of green commuting density. And what you can see is that area that's not uniform. It's different throughout the city and the region. And also, you can probably pick out bus lines and max lines almost from looking at this, because those are the people who have the opportunity to use public transportation the most. You can't tell from this map, but most people in Portland commute by car still. And there was no rejoicing. Green energy use, green living density. This is information that we got from PGE. What it depicts here are people who opt to pay more every month to have 100% of their energy consumption offset by renewable sources like wind and hydro. And so we get a little bit of a different pattern again. So what we decided is we would bring all of these measures together and layer them on top of each other in order to get some kind of surrogate Portlandness measure. And so this is the surrogate Portlandness map. And as you can see, it's very dense in the center, and it sort of radiates out and gets less green, sort of less Portlandy, if you will. And we looked at this and we said, well, this is a little strange, because some parts of Portland aren't very Portland at all. And how can that be? So maybe the problem isn't that these parts of Portland aren't very Portlandy. Maybe the problem is that we're talking about Portlandness in a very restricted way. And this is a very narrow way of looking at Portland. It's one that highlights the things that are happening in the center of the city, but maybe doesn't reflect the experiences and sense of places that are happening in other places. So we thought to ourselves, well, how do we do this now? We want to make maps. We want to represent sense of place. And so we came up with something else, and that was the idea of a cultural atlas. And there are a bunch of cultural atlases that have come out in the last few years that we really liked. And we thought, well, we should do one for Portland as well. So what is a cultural atlas? A cultural atlas is a way of providing us with new cartographies and geographies of the city that we live in and that we think we know really well. A cultural atlas challenges our geographic imaginations. A cultural atlas is not comprehensive in any way. It's not like a gazetteer where you can look up sort of the boilerplate information that you want to see, but rather it tells us stories about a particular place. And it uses maps in order to do that. And speaking of maps, and maps are extremely powerful. As geographers, we talk about the power of maps over our imaginations. And a lot of people give maps an enormous amount of authority. When they see a map, well, that's what's there because it's on a map, so it must be correct. But of course, maps are not the places themselves. They're only representations of places. And a lot of maps use the same symbols and the same conventions over and over again so that we can read them very easily. And I think this makes sense to a certain degree. If you went to Google every day and they had different symbology for everything, you wouldn't be able to use it to navigate very well.
One of the things, great things about working with a team was to be able to just bounce around all ideas. And I think when we were at the heart of working on this, we had a group of people who would really challenge each other to come up with just the next crazy idea of how to map something.
Yeah.
And it didn't all work, but it led to some wonderful products.
We also had cartographers who were willing to keep trying, making different things. And, you know, they'd come with something and we'd say, we like this, but then here are the 10 things we don't like. And that, you know, that could be discouraging, but they took it, you know, in the way as a challenge. And so that's why things look so good, is because they changed things so many times, they iterated so many times, that the final product was really interesting.
And we'd even have conversations about high concept ideas, and not even talk about what we could possibly do, and then someone would go away and come back 2 weeks later with a great idea.
How was that, the talk at Powell's? I didn't go to this.
It was a lot of fun. There were a lot of people there, and we were, of course, really nervous because, you know, you want to do a good job. What's that?
You were both attending. Okay.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And we do most of the talks together, yeah.
I'm sure there was an intensive Q&A session at this thing.
Kind of was.
Yes, there was. The old-time Portlanders were asking why wasn't my favorite topic mapped? And, you know, we really tried making a map of the Rose Festival, but it never worked.
Yeah, no.
And we don't understand it either.
That was a lot of fun. And so, yeah, it was really well received. And it was fun to hear the stories of people who worked on the book. You know, they've talked to other people. And when people see the book and talk to them about it, it's fun to hear the stories from them.
So we're downtown right now. How would you describe this area?
Well, we try to get away from the more or less Portland and look at the different Portlands. And this is the well-known Portland, I think. This is the Portland that,
what we used to call the New York Times Portland.
Yeah, exactly. You know, if there's a game going on, a basketball or a soccer game, they're going to see some shots of downtown probably. Yeah.
But I think we became over time more interested in these other Portlands that are no more or less Portland than this part of town.
I mean, there's a huge part of East Portland that was annexed in the 1980s, and this is part of Portland that is needing lots of attention right now. So, you know, it's been interesting to learn more about that and to talk to people about that, because a lot of people who are maybe new to town, they don't know how old different parts of the city are, and it's great to talk about that, because to understand why some neighborhoods are facing the challenges they are, you have to know a little bit about how the city came together.
So you learned a bit more about the history of Portland during the process of making this.
Yeah.
More than it is actually reflected in the book. I think it informs just about everything we were working on was a little bit of history.
I'm not a cartographer myself. I tell people what I think would be a good map, and then they go and make it, and I come back and I tell them, you know, why I think it should be changed, and then they look at me side-eyed, and then sometimes they go do it. And I work with cartographers, and I did a lot of the writing on the book.
Right.
But just having people who understand how to put together a story about a particular theme, it takes a lot of time. And so the cartography is, of course, a very labor-intensive part of it.
Sure.
But to be able to get a story, and that's what David and I sort of, it's kind of our job, is to make sure that the stories are coming together.
In fact, we, maybe in 2011 or 12, we assigned the idea of creating a page pair as a final class project for a course we co-taught. I think everyone thought that was going to be really easy. I don't have to write a term paper. I just have to create this 2 pages for a book. And it was much harder than anyone even imagined.
Of course.
How to boil down a whole lot of data and ideas into a succinct story.
My mind absolutely boggles at the number of data points that we're talking about when we look at a book like that. And when Greg, you know, gave me this opportunity, my head spun of what questions I was going to ask. And I don't think I'm doing my ambitions justice here. To me, using data to tell stories is very important. I'm a big Tableau user. I don't know if you guys ever use that.
Yeah, beautiful software.
It's lovely software. Yeah, for sure. For sure. And I don't know, do you think that you would depart from, I know you would keep cartography central to your project, but do you feel that there are other branches to go down that it might actually not be maps on page or every other page?
As you suggested, I think we probably approach infographics as much as maps.
Right.
Because I think a lot of creative infographics can do the same sort of thing as maps. And the power of maps is to be able to put so much information in a really small place. But a well-designed infographic can do the same.
It's almost doing the same thing.
And I think everybody loves trying to create those kinds of infographics, it's challenging.
Yeah, the trick with infographics is there's a lot of books out there with infographics, and some of the graphics look really cool, but it would really be impossible to get any data from.
Right.
And so the trick is to make something that looks really good that you can actually use, that you can actually glean data from. And so that's what we're trying to do.
Now, what other cultural atlases influenced this book?
Dennis Wood's Everything Sings, which is an excellent treatment of a particular neighborhood. And so he walks through his neighborhood and he maps things like the squirrel networks through the trees and the power lines and the route that the mail delivery person takes and the faces of the jack-o'-lanterns on Halloween. So, you know, real intimate level stuff. So that was very inspiring to us.
And he shows what you can map if you just really get out on the street and look.
This is called Mission Invisible. We had a group of students one summer, and David and I, we went out and we walked all these streets and we counted all the security cameras in downtown Portland, and we counted over 400 of them and we mapped them. And then we got a layer of information, GIS information, that had streetlights on it, and we had one of our cartographers map the path of least surveillance from Union Station to Kramer Hall, where our office is. And the subtext here is that there's an enormous amount of security cameras out there on the streets that's watching us all the time, and there are good and bad things associated with that. But we thought that this map wasn't enough to tell the story, so if you look at the book, there's a second page pair that accompanies it. And it's got an essay, and it's got photographs of all kinds of different security cameras, because we felt in order to tell the story that we wanted to tell, we needed to have more than the map. We needed a suite of graphics and text and infographics and the map. And so a lot of the pages don't just have maps. They have other things that help us tell these stories that we want to try to tell.
As we were working on this, Rebecca Solnit's Infinite City about San Francisco came out. And she's a writer that we really like as well. And so, you know, we're definitely paying attention to that as well. Becky Cooper, a little bit later, had one mapping Manhattan. And what she did is she gave out blank maps of Manhattan to people that she just met. She did a huge transect of New York, handed it out, had her address on it, and then had people mail them back. She's also got access to some celebrity types, so there were also, you know, maps by, I think, people like Yoko Ono and stuff in there, which helped. But it was a great project. So stuff like that we really like.
You mentioned maps of the mind too in your speech at PDX Talks. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah,
you were thinking
well, the mental maps is the idea that we all carry around different
maps
of the world or of a city or of a place in us, and that there's a way to get that out of people, and we can sort of compare what our maps look like.
Right, and I think that's something, one of the things we tried to do in a lot of different ways. I think we both really like the idea of mental maps, and I built a number of composite mental maps based on information we collected from various people in classrooms and such. For example, there's a map in the book of people were given a blank map of Portland and asked to map a number of different features, and one of those was the Willamette River.
Right.
And so I took what everybody marked as the Willamette River and put it together to get a composite look. And each map is not that accurate, but the composite map is fantastically accurate compared to what it could be, especially from working with a blank map. So people can do, I think the composite maps can be just fantastic.
Did you anticipate that wisdom of crowds, or were you agnostic about how that was going to turn out when you told everybody to draw the river?
Oh, we're used to this some people not doing very well with mapping this. Or, I mean, you give them an outline of the city of Portland and they draw the entire metro area. Or they draw just their neighborhood, or they draw what they know. But that's okay, and that's what mental maps are all about.
But did you anticipate that the composite was going to be so accurate?
Actually, yes, based on some previous work we had done with music.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, so this is all under the branch of a kind of little-known part of geography called psychogeography, which is the idea that there is a geography to our emotions and feelings. as we walk around the city. And of course, there's lots of people in the city, so all these geographies are sort of coming into collision with one another. So it's a way of exploring the way that people feel about places. And it's a really difficult, kind of up in the air, intangible thing, but it's real, because we all know that it's real and we all feel it. This is a way to try to visualize what that's like.
Yeah, one person's view may be very personal and not that accurate, but if you ask a lot of people the same question, you can get a really interesting response.
So where can we purchase Portlandness?
Well, wherever books are sold, but we like people to purchase it locally if they could, like from Powell's or our friends at Broadway Books or folks like that who have supported us quite a bit.
Yeah, so those are probably good places to pick them up. Yep.
Strangely enough, the Portland State Bookstore does not carry it.
What? Hope you're listening, Portland State Bookstore.
Hunter and David, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you for having
Thanks
us.
Thanks for having us.
And thank you for listening to the Weekly Portland Podcast. We'll be back next Monday. Please join us.
Cultural Atlas. Can you explain to us what that is exactly?
Well, I'm not sure we can, actually. But but the idea is to use the word cultural to separate it from what most people think of as an atlas, which I might say is a little bit boring. And we didn't want to be that.
No, it's certainly not that.
So instead of a conventional atlas is useful, certainly, but it's got the things that you would expect to see. So a section on economy and a section on housing prices and sort of the boilerplate things. And what we wanted to do is do something a little bit different, a bunch of things that you maybe didn't expect to see, to challenge you to see the city a little bit differently.